Welcome everyone to We Talk, where we sit down with women entrepreneurs and we discuss successes, failures, journey along the way. I'm super excited for this conversation. Michelle is the founder and CEO of S4Nets, which is an IT service provider here in Pittsburgh and beyond. They serve nationally, but it's just really encouraging and refreshing to me talking to a tech company who for the last 25 years has been owned by a woman and has, you know, succeeded exponentially in her ventures. I'm very excited to share this story with you all. I hope that you enjoy. Michelle, I am super excited to jump onto this call. You are actually, even though I'm deep, deep, deep into women in tech, you are my first woman in tech conversation, and especially one that's been in tech for 25 years. So I'm super excited. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and then also introduce S4Nets?
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Michelle McGough. I'm the founder and CEO of Solutions for Networks. Solutions for Networks, what my team would say is we're effective, efficient experts. And we're our core competencies are network integration, wireless infrastructures, Microsoft, cybersecurity when it comes to network network security that affects all that, and Microsoft, everything from Azure, Office 365, and all their security stuff that they do. They have probably 200 applications. We focus on very, very few. I've considered myself a Pittsburgher, even though I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee, moved to North Braddock when I was a kid and raised by my grandmother, first generation college, and went to Pitt and Duquesne after that, and spent a lot of time in Fortune 500s, Bella, Pennsylvania, before it was AT&T, Sprint, before it was Sprint. so I had a lot of background there, and then went to a couple startups, and probably would still be there, except it got sold to a company that had a CEO that was less than ethical, who ended up going to jail for stock manipulation, oh, by the way. So built a business case and started my own company thanks to Sally Wellinger at PPG, who was the head of IT. I sat in her office one day and I said, "So Sally, I'm thinking about starting my own company." She goes, "Oh, what the hell? Worst case, you find a job in a year." So that was the kick in the butt I needed, and the rest is history.
It's so funny that who was it from PPG? Who said that? What was her name?
Sally Wellinger. In fact, I saw her about 2 months ago. We stay in touch. She's been retired.
So I was thinking of starting Red Tree, and there was someone who said literally the exact same thing to me, and said like, "Hey, listen, how much money do you have in your savings?" I was like, "I got 6 months." She said, "Try for 6 months. You know, worst case, you just go get a job, right?" And here we are, 25 years later, right? So thank you.
Starting January 25th, it'll be our 25th year this year.
So. Wow, that's amazing. Michelle, I'm super curious about what was the technology scene, right? What was the not only technology, but business sector like 25 years ago?
The good news is it was pretty active, maybe not. Pittsburgh was just sort of, you know, starting to get on the radar as far as nationally is concerned. But the reason I love tech and did in the last jobs I had previous to starting the company was it's always changing. It's never boring, right? And you sort of need to multitask, right? Because you get things thrown at you. But things change sometimes daily with things that are going on in the industry. And I love to learn and I love to research. My team will go, "Oh, great. She can't sleep again. I'm getting, you know, she's sending me emails at like 3 a.m. Right. So, but I love to do that. So it's a great fit. But to your point, it was, I had a lot of detractors, you know, people that said, you know, even after year one or two, I had more than two employees, but, oh, you know, she only has two employees, you know, she's going bankrupt, she doesn't know what she's doing, blah, blah, blah. Well, I think we share this too. Tell me I can't do something, and that's going to make it even more of a challenge to make sure it happens, right? And I had some great team members in the beginning, and we were able to capitalize on this. And oh, by the way, Get Business in Pittsburgh, which to this day is not exactly a best practice for our fellow small businesses. It seems like a lot of small businesses that I know in tech get more of their business outside of Pittsburgh. And you know what? That shouldn't be how it is. That shouldn't be how it is. Because there's a lot of amazing tech companies in Pittsburgh that could absolutely add value to all the companies that could use them.
Yeah, that's really surprising to me, because I know that there's a lot of big movers and shakers inside of Pittsburgh. You know, the airport, for example, they're really trying to stay inside of Pittsburgh and find some of those contracts.
And they are an amazing poster child for that. They are the exception. And, we've been very fortunate to be doing business with the airport. And oh, by the way, you know, Westinghouse, Alcoa, PPG, U.S. Steel, Federated Investors, those are all clients too. So kudos to them as well.
I wonder if it's just a recent shift over, based off of 25 years ago, because I do know that Pittsburgh, although have its flaws, there's a lot of people who are intentional trying to continually grow Pittsburgh. And I wonder if that's a part of the rapid growth of Pittsburgh. I'm curious to know some of your thoughts now, having been here for so many years.
I think we've been more recognized as a tech center over the last 5, 6, 7 years than we were 25 years ago. I think that's one of the things. It's hard, quite frankly, it's hard not to be with the colleges that we have in this region, right? But it's still tough to get the kids to stay here after they go to college, right? So, we all need to do our fair share of trying to keep them here, right?
It's one of the biggest pain points. Everyone does kind of say, like, we've understand what's going on, right? All of these very high potential humans are going to school here, and then they're all very rapidly leaving. So how do we get them to stay?
Right.
And I do think there's a lot of the universities are even doing a really good job. Like, there's Pitt's got like TAFL scholarships and stuff where they try to get the kids. I'm going to use kids. These are like young adults, right? get the students, right? Integrated into the businesses, small businesses, while they're in school. So I think we're all trying for sure. But yeah, there's definitely a lot more that could be done. So
definitely have seen improvements.
Yeah. Thanks for that. So let's go back to Michelle, right? So 25 years ago, Sally says, why not? You can just go and find a job, you know, but I'm kind of curious, like what made you think to start your own business? What was that drive?
So I wasn't exactly the most political person in the jobs that I worked in. And when I left AT&T, I worked for a startup. Actually, I had the job 4 months before I left AT&T. I would also say something we discussed a while ago. In retrospect, every job I've had except the first one was because of a relationship. But the company got sold to an unethical company. And I sat back and said, okay, I can go work somewhere else, or I can try to almost emulate the company that I loved, right? And I always wanted to work someplace or create something where I'd want to go to work every day, right? Because we've all had jobs and stuff where waking up in the morning and going to work, whether it's downstairs or in your office or, you know, trekking to wherever, it's not fun. So, and the culture was really important to me too, right? So In fact, the proudest award that I've had has been, you know, top places to work in Pittsburgh for the last 8 or 9 years. So that's sort of cool. But I did a business plan, and I didn't want to, because it's like, right? I'm not that. I'm okay with numbers, enough to be dangerous, right? Right. But so I put together a business plan. And darn, three years later, I hadn't really looked at it, which you're supposed to do every 6 months, right? But darn, it was like cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. I check, right? And I guess there's this weird universe law that says, not only in business, but in personal, if you write it down, the chances of it happening are like exponentially higher, right? But a business plan does make you think about your competitors, you know, who you want to go after as far as your clients are concerned, what you want to focus on, when you're going to hire people, who you're going to hire. So it makes you sit down and think about all that stuff that you don't necessarily want to think about. And the other thing that's that luckily, sort, it's not like we had clients when I started, but I knew that we could probably get some work with PPG because I had worked with Sally and her entire team forever, as well as Bayer. And I had a non-compete for a year. So the first year, they weren't my clients, but I had the Port Authority of Pittsburgh was probably my first client. I had a law firm in DC, and you'd think that represented like Russia, China, right? So you'd think they have a lot of money, right? And they're going to pay you. They stiffed me out of $15,000, and it's not like you can really sue a law firm, right? Especially one in DC, right? So that was, that was a good lesson. Good lesson, right? So, but you know, I'd do it over again. I wish I would have, you know, started it earlier, but you know, I did, and no regrets.
So your non-compete. So when you left, what did your non-compete?
So my non-compete said I could not solicit any client. It was, it wasn't awful. But it said I couldn't solicit any clients that I had, and I was in sales. I was in charge of sales for the region, which by the way was okay. A year goes fast, quite frankly, and I thought that it helped that for the first year I was working two jobs. I was starting the company and going to Columbia, Maryland, Monday through Thursday, helping them with sales. And my first hire was helping build a data center. So we were getting income, right? Mm-hmm. And the company that it was called Tidepoint, it was started by the guy that sold his company to the bad guys in Boston. So he came back and said, and it was very gracious of him to say, you know, hey, I think we can use you to help. And so for a year and a half, but the humor sort of that, it was a handshake for the contract. Yeah. A year and a half later, they had hired too many people. I knew it. I saw it, right? You know, when you're in business for 100 years, you figure those stuff up early. But it was run by some young folks that didn't have the experience. So it was their first business. So they went bankrupt. And a year later, the creditors came after me because I got preferential treatment getting paid the $30,000 because I knew they were going to go bankrupt, right? But I just had a handshake, not a contract. So my lawyer said, you can either pay me and them $30,000 or just write the check for $30,000. Luckily, I was able to just write the check for $30,000.
And this was for the previous, like, so you wrote the $30,000 to your previous employer?
For the company that I was working with, Tidepoint. For the year and a half while I was starting my own company. So don't get me wrong, it helped with cash flow exceedingly because I was getting paid as a 1099 for that company, right? So I was able to weather my non-compete with that as well as a couple clients, right? Yeah. And it gave me because I started the company with $10,000, right? So it gave me the extra money I needed to hire more people, right?
Yeah.
So that's how we did it.
So that also brought me to, you know, when you first started out, so you mentioned, you know, you had relationships with PPG and you had some relationships with Bayer, but you had to wait the year. Mm-hmm. And my curiosity is, you know, how did you land those large brands only a year in?
Because I was a global account manager at AT&T for PPG. I managed the region after I left AT&T for the one company, and then when it was sold. So I had relationships with a decent amount of these Fortune 500 companies, not knowing that they'd do business with little old me, right? That was a risk, right? But they did. So those are the doors I started hitting on first.
So it's just so prevalent, you know, as the more conversations that I have with more women and even, you know, entrepreneurs, is it always seems to come down to the relationships and how you continue to foster those as you continue to even use those, that, you know, your point, right? So, you know, you didn't know that they were going to do work with little old you, but you asked and you tapped into that relationship because you'd had it for so long. So it's just amazing to me how it always continually comes back to the relationships.
Well, and I've mentored some startups and stuff. There's another problem too. You can have the greatest people, the greatest product, the greatest software, but if you don't have any customers, it doesn't matter. So that's an issue too, that you almost have to be there when you're starting, right? Or, you know, get input from people, like, you know, or do something for free, like that you can use as a, you know, a reference or something or a referral. But customers are really important.
I also like the model, and I've suggested to a lot of people, do you know, 2 to 3 different free projects, and, you know, and but the right. Free exchange needs to be, yeah, you're going to write me a testimonial, you're going to connect me with so and so, you're going to do, I don't
absolutely
know, a plethora of things, but also you need that portfolio item, so get out there. And I agree with you, it kind of what's the term, sort of skins your knee on someone that isn't paid yet, right? So you can kind of work out some kinks a little bit here and there.
Yep.
But for someone like you, right, I feel like you knew the industry, right? So you were in the industry in your previous positions and sort of jumping over to those, you know, and I don't know if you gave away any sort of free projects, but like you kind of knew, I would imagine, a lot of the nuances.
And to your point, I didn't do free, but I did a lot less money, because the other issue with free is sometimes they just don't appreciate, the wrong word, but they don't value what they get as much.
It's very true. It's very true. So Michelle, kind of going back to, you know, you starting 25 years ago in tech, what's that look like, right? You know, we have a lot of conversations about women in tech and a lot of the struggles that they have to go through. You have been in tech for 25 years as a business owner. Can you talk a little bit about what it's been like being a woman in tech?
You know, here's what's frustrating to me. Here we are 25 years later, right? Sitting in a meeting, and there's one woman in the room. Or I'm sending out job requests and trying to find people, and there's no women applying. And I think we're still doing not a service to us and minorities about the possibilities and opening. I got into tech happenstance. It was like, hey, I needed a job. The job I had a company car, because I could only go so many places on a bus for interviews, right? So I had that job for 3 months until I got the job with MCI. So it was sort of by happenstance that I even went into sales and tech, because in some respects, you know, people in general think sales, ooh, yuck, right? So, which you know, it can be fun. I'm sort of an introvert if you do all the stupid tests and stuff, but you know, if you believe in what you're doing and you, you know, you are trying to help people and you have a great team, then it is fun. And I think that's with any job. So, you know, when you say tech, I say, you have to be open to the possibilities, and we're getting better. I mean, with Red Chair and all the other things that are going on, you know, in our community and outside, but it's not even close to where it needs to be. It's not even close.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here. So you know, you say you have positions open and you don't get a lot of women that apply for them. What do you think is sort of the cause of that? And I understand that, like, you're not an expert here, but your gut instinct as to why.
There aren't that many. And there aren't. Trust me, I would hire them all if I could find them. I would.
Yeah.
I've hired 9 people between, oh, by the way, some women, just saying, between, and minorities, between December and the middle of February. I've never hired that many people in a 2-month period in 25 years, let alone even before in the jobs I had before. So we had some great applicants, but and I put it out there for everywhere, right? But I think sometimes women think they have to be able to do the job before they get it. And that's an issue because no one knows everything they have to do in a job. I don't care if it's tech, even a waitress. I lied to get my first job as a waitress. And they said, oh, since you've been a waitress before, you can have this area, the busy area. I'm like, right? But I figured it out, right? We're all smart. We can figure it out.
I think from my standpoint too, as I look at it, And I see maybe, and I don't know if actually a lot of these women are even thinking that they can go into tech as much. And I'm curious, you know, now I kind of want to look at the data, but I don't see a lot of women who think of going into the tech profession, but the women that do, to your point,
I know,
love it and right. They're good at it. But a lot of them don't sit there and think, oh, you know, tech would be a good career move for me. And I don't know if it's the sort of societal messaging or, you know, probably something a lot bigger and more complex than the two of us. But it's always been baffling to me because, you know, people like you and I, we want to hire more women. We want to promote more women. And sometimes it is the application pool just isn't really there.
Yeah.
So.
No.
Cool. Thanks for letting me put you on the spot.
No, and I go out of my way to, much like you do, you know, here's the possibilities. Like, yeah. You know, don't discount this, you know, because yeah. it is a good area and it can actually be fun.
Yeah. So Michelle, you've mentioned a few different times about your team. So when you first started, you had 2 different people. You just said, you know, the last couple months you've hired 9 different, right? I'm a little bit curious about 2 different things. So first of all, you had said, you know, you came from a sales background and moving, I would assume, from a sales background into a leadership, you yourself had to develop new skills, new attentions, things like that. If you can talk a little bit about that. And then also talk a lot about, which I can circle back to later, about the team and some of the ebbs and flows over the years that you've experienced with your team.
So easier said than done, but I've always tried, and you've heard it's a cliche sort of, but I've always tried to hire people smarter than me, right? Because that only makes the whole team stronger and recognize my flaws. I can be really detail oriented when I have to be, but if I have my preference, I'm not. So when we were able to hire a COO, oh my God, I was like doing happy dance on the West End Bridge, right? So, finances, I can do it. And oh, by the way, every person that runs a company needs to understand the financials. Take a course. I don't care what you do, because you just need to. You need to understand what EBITDA is. You need to understand cash flow. You need to understand, like, you know, 5 or 10 fundamentals, because if you don't, the chances of your company going out of business are a lot higher.
What's EBITDA?
Earnings before income tax, you know, something like that. So, you know, you take profit minus expenses, you come up with a number, you add some things in, subtract some things. That's the easiest way of putting it, right? But you need to know that, because, you know, if this month you make $100,000, but you know the next 2 months you're not going to make anything and you have payroll, well, Houston, then we got a problem, right? So, So, and then, you know, also your accountant, your banker, your lawyers, they should be part of your team. And I learned the banker part. I was like, you know, who's a banker? You know, you put the checks in, you know, blah, 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 you pay your, no. There's times when, they can help you with cash flow if you need it, and, you know, it's good to ask for, forgiveness. Sometimes we had one client that didn't pay us $1.8 million for almost a year. And they had approved the project. We had everything implemented. They loved it. But they ran into cash flow problems. Yeah. So it flowed downhill. But if you have a good banker that, you know, trusts that you're going to be bringing the money in and all that kind of stuff, you know, I've never really had debt. But, you know, there's been times where my cash flow has been okay, but, you know, looking forward, you're like, you know, Michelle, this isn't good if they're not paying you. And it's been like, you know, yeah. So that's happened, unfortunately, a couple times.
So I always tell myself, you need a banker, you need a lawyer. Right. Whenever you first, you don't need to have them on retainer or anything else like that. And the banker was real important when pandemic happened, and I needed a direct line to a banker to say, hey, what's going on with this PPP? How do I get in line? How do I get first in line? Right.
Right. Right.
So yeah. And at first, when someone first told me that, when I first started, I was like, nah. You know, you need capital, you need this, you need that. No, yeah, you need a banker, you need a lawyer. I didn't think about the accountant.
Yeah. So, and then ebbs and flows on the team that you asked me about. So because culture is real important, I wish I could get better at this. We do hire slow, even though we've hired so many. You have basically sometimes I'll call the person and say, hey, just trying to get a net here. How much money do you need? Can I afford you? You know, let's just deal with that up front so we don't waste your time or ours, right? And then we probably interview with at least 3 or 4 people on the team, because it has to be good for both, right? Or it's not going to work. Now, there's been a few times where we've been, for lack of a better word, fooled by the capabilities of people. And, you know, you'd think I'd learn after 24 years, but there's still times when you try to give people the benefit of the doubt because you can, and you want everybody to succeed, but sometimes it just isn't going to work. And your friends can tell you till you're blue in the face and they're sick of hearing that, you know, so-and-so didn't do this. And they're like, right. And you're like, maybe I asked them wrong, or maybe. Yeah. So you try, you know, because in some ways you don't want to, you know, admit that your team, we didn't hire the right person, right? Or even the wrong person, and not be able to find another seat for them. Because sometimes you can do that too, right? But fire fast is one of my biggest flaws.
Well, I like that you released like hired slow. My main question though to you is, you know, because we experienced this, and with the hiring slow, that does put more on your current team, right? So they may have to sort of stretch a little bit outside of their, right. Maybe true, you know, true to the position description. You know, how do you have these conversations with your team that, you know, hey, we may need you to stretch temporarily, but stretch?
I've been very fortunate. That's all I can say. If we don't have a lot of overtime weekends, that kind of stuff, but when we do, they're there. And all I can do is say is, you know, every day within the first 3 hours, right? I sort of say like I'm grateful, right? Because you can't have a company without a team, right? And there is a lot of gratitude for the people I have because they do step up when we need them to. And that's huge. That's huge.
It really is. I think it also helps too that you have a culture, from what I'm hearing, a culture of, you know, not sort of overworking or burning people out, but you know, there is times where you need to stretch into that place. And it's sort of innate inside of the tech community that you do more and there's a lot of burnout and you're working 80-hour work weeks and so on and so forth. So
no, in fact, you know, if there's, you know, a time that someone has to work, I don't know, 7 days in a row, well, you know, we have a pretty darn good vacation policy, but we'll say, you know, take these 2 days off. We'll deal with the client. You need a break. And I'm thinking in particular of someone right now that I need to do that with in the next month.
I mean, that's just a testament to the leadership at S4Nets. You know, how many times have, you know, and I've always worked in small business myself, but, you know, I have a lot of friends who work for larger organizations and, you know, their bosses aren't sitting there saying, you know what, I should really urge them to take some PTO. It's been a little while, right?
Right.
No, it's, you know, we're living in a capitalistic society of like, wow, you're going to keep working and keep working and keep working. And even if you love the job that you're in, breaks are always important. And having management push you in that direction, that just is, like you said, a good company culture.
Right. And that's why a lot of these big companies have a lot of turnover, right?
So true. It's so absolutely true. So, you know, you talked a lot about your team, you know, and you talked a lot about tech. You know, what ways, Michelle, are you staying relevant? Either, you know, so you said you've got, what, 9 new hires in the last 2 months? So there had to have been a lot of things, you know, you guys staying on top of tech, on top of culture, anything that made these people want to come and work for you. You know, what are you doing at S4Nets?
So, learning is a requirement, continuous learning. We have had a couple employees over the years, team members that think they know everything. In tech, I don't care how brilliant you are, you can't know everything, right? So keeping up on like best practices, like for years, Cisco was like the leader in network infrastructure. Then Arista came along. So, and we saw some of our clients, the big ones, you know, saying, so we got certifications in Arista so that we could help our clients. Because unfortunately, much like we sort of talked a little bit about, these large companies don't necessarily invest in their employees. The other thing is, while I have people that probably don't need to get certifications, they're probably better, smarter, whatever than the suppliers. However, there's lots of times where it's a good housekeeping seal of approval. Oh, you know, we have 3 CISSPs and, you know, CCIE and blah, 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 right? It's just validation. So going to conferences, getting the certifications, lots of companies don't pay for the certifications. Oh, by the way, there's times, don't get me started, that even I have had to take stupid tests so that would get a certification because one person can only have these two, one person can only have, yeah, don't get me started. But I practice what I preach, right? So, but that being said, we've told our team, I don't care if you take this test 200 times, just friggin' pass it, right? And lots of companies don't do that, but it's not only helping us, it's helping them, right? So, And we pay for all of that. And there's, I'd say we're the exception to the rule in paying for that stuff too. But again, I practice what I preach. I don't expect, you know, we've had a couple times when a couple of our team has had to take 3 and 4 tests in a quarter because one of our certifications was running out in order for us to sell something, right? So, and to your point about stepping up and working weekends and nights to study for this stuff, because the other issue is, much like school in general, you can know the stuff, but the test might not test what the heck it really is. It's made by someone that doesn't even, yeah, don't get me, you get the point.
I love that juxtaposition that you sort of move that into, right? So like it's one thing to sort of learn of the new tech, right? So everyone wants to talk about AI right now. So like, right. You know, are you using AI? And I would put money on the fact that almost every single person in the world is probably using some form of AI, whether or not they knew it or not.
Yep.
But to your point, how do I now take that? How do you take that sort of certification and that information of the technology and give it to our clients and put it into full implementation? Because it's different. It's so much different. You know, right. I can take a test about chemistry. I failed a lot of chemistry things, but I don't know, lighting something on fire, right? So like I can take that test and I can tell you what components go into it. But, you know, I don't know until I tangibly need to build a fire, right? So there's a difference between taking something and learning it and then providing
that. We all know
that.
A lot of people that are book smart, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but it's twofold, right? So, you know, I like that you're learning it, but then to provide it is something different.
Right. And teaching our clients so that, you know, that's one of the value added because a lot of them aren't getting training. So we don't want to be there forever. We want them to be able to do the stuff, right? And keep it going.
And I've always thought that that was such a unique standpoint for Esfernets is, you know, you're not trying to, you know, so they, I don't know what your term is. My term is called an agency lock-in, where a lot of marketing agents, advertising agencies in general, they want to lock specific clients in. You have to work with me because platform, whatever it is. And I know that that's one of the things that you and I align on in that, you know, I want you to want to work with me, not have to work with me. Mm-hmm. So, but that, I mean, that's a unique way of thinking.
Right.
And that's one of the big differences that I've seen for Esfernets. But how did you come to that?
Well, you know, when you're a startup in a space, you don't have a choice, right? So let's start with that minor detail. But the other thing is, you and I both know clients that have had the same vendor for 15 years, right? So it's not that we want to take it over, but at least open up your eyes to other possibilities, right? Or other avenues of maybe saving money. I mean, a good example is Microsoft. Now, I don't know about you, but I use like three apps of Microsoft, right? Excel, PowerPoint, right? So there's 500 of them, right? But and there's also all kind of licenses, E5, E3, G this, blah, 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 right? No one knows what the heck they have. So, okay, so you buy your Microsoft stuff from whoever, right? And maybe you get it cheaper than you get it from us or whatever, but at least give us the opportunity to come in and prove that we're...
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And how many times, I don't know about you and anyone who owns a business listening here, right? Anytime that you need to or want to like add on a new software, I would highly suggest going and looking at the current software plans that you have and seeing if it will expand into, right? And sometimes, so for example, we use a AI note taker and we have G Suites. G Suite has an AI note taker. It's not good. They need to innovate a lot more to it. So like we'll circle back to them in 6 months or a year. But even just, you know, how many times have you looked in some place and it's like, oh, I'm paying for this subscription, but it also is offered here and I'm double paying for a lot of that. So, and to think about it in, and I can even imagine in more of a corporate enterprise level, that's got to be a game changer for you guys, being that more relationship focused.
If you're doing the same thing you've done over and over for, you know, years, then you don't, you know, even in personal, you don't appreciate the other possibilities.
Yeah.
That's all.
So Michelle, before we get into our last couple of questions here, so I kind of want to circle back to the very beginning, right? So Sally, what have you done over the last few years to sort of sustain your network and to maybe even sort of be paying that forward a little bit?
Well, I've done stuff all along, but so I'm on a couple boards that I am actively involved with. I belong to Outdoor Odyssey, which is a group for vets and leadership for kids as well as corporations, you know, the team building things and stuff in the middle of nowhere in Somerset. General Jones bought this stuff with his own money. I'm bummed I can't spend as much time as I'd like, because I think every 13, 14 year old should go out there, have a mentor, be out there. He's brought in some young people from Africa to be part of the programs in the summer. It's just mind-boggling great. And for vets that cannot, you know, that don't know what they're going to do because they've been disabled, it's a week-long program. They get a fire team. And just from a, you know, just from a making them feel that they have, that they're not alone, right? And they have people that care, is huge, right? I belong to the African American Chamber of Commerce. I've helped a couple small businesses there. I've helped, like I said, some startups with CMU and Pitt. At times, right now, I've helped a couple young women. One I actually met on a plane that I hired. Oh, by the way, and helped her get her immigration H-1B card. By the way, there's some great lawyers in Pittsburgh that do immigration. Come to find out, and I'm now helping a young woman that I sat next to her. Took a group out that were a college golf team in the last 2 years, and she wants to try to get on the LPGA tour, and she doesn't fit the mold, and she has more grit and gratitude than most people I've met. And she reminds me of me, and, you know, it's nice to help some people get a leg up. So, you know, while I'm, and I'm on the board of Frostburg Business School. So I'm down there, and they have women organizations and stuff. So it's not like I'm, the Pittsburgh Technology Council too. I'm proud to say I got on the board, and hopefully as time goes on, I'll be more involved with that. But that just happened in the last couple of months. So
Tech Council is pivotal for, we talked a little bit about this at the beginning, right?
Yeah, the EDGE program. Yeah.
Well, that, and I think just, you know, Pittsburgh and the, you know, what, 15 years? I'm trying to think how long I've been here. 15 years ago, Pittsburgh was not the tech hub.
Amazing what's happened under Audrey's, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Then to be a part of that board, what an honor. And they truly do, especially with like the Apprenti program.
Company should be part of that. They should.
And that's, can you speak at all to the Apprenti program just for the listeners' sort of context?
So, Apprenti is a program for, and I'm going to butcher it, for young people that, you know, might not have a degree, might not have anything but grit, and they want to learn.
Yep.
And you get put through a program. I don't know how many weeks it is, but you're pretty much guaranteed a job after. Yep. And it's mostly software based. But again, it's just a matter of having the right tools to learn, which people, don't necessarily intuitively even know where to get the free courses online. It's not like you sit down and say, you know, I want to learn how to develop and see. Yeah, right. So, you know, it gives you the framework. And a couple of these folks have gone on, and don't get me wrong, money's not everything. But, you know, when you come from being homeless on a street to making $100,000, that is not only life-changing for the person, but their family, their everything So it's a powerful program.
And I think, and this is where I'm not 100% sure I understand, but a lot of the businesses are contributing to the fund
right.
to allow, to pay for these students to go through the apprentice program. And then, you know, honestly, they're networking with them, they're helping with them, and they do end up getting jobs. So it helps with that, you know, keeping people inside of Pittsburgh once they go through that education. So it's an absolute win-win. And it's, you know, it's literally, that's one thing I love about Pittsburgh is some, you know, again, we've got our flaws, but we put our money where our mouth is most of the time.
No, I agree. And you know, sometimes you just have to open your eyes to see the things that are available because it can almost be overwhelming. You know, but
it really can.
Yeah. So,
all right. So, Michelle, we have a beautiful way to close here. What is your definition of success?
That's a tough question, right? You know, I think it changes depending on where you are in your life, but I think achievement and appreciation would be two words that I'd use to define success. You know, and it can be as achievement can be something as you know, bizarre as making a souffle, right? And it not falling, right? Or getting a hole in one. So it doesn't, it depends on how you personally define success, right? And the same with appreciation, sort of just taking the time to appreciate that, you know, where you came from, what you have, what the possibilities are going forward. The last 10 years of my life have been the best, even with some of the crummies that have happened with me wanting to hide under the bed looking for incoming missiles, right? So, you know, so just that. So that's my definition of success.
I love it. What is your most memorable lesson from a failure?
Trust your gut, and you have to be resilient. And that is easier said than done. But you have to get up and get out and just, you know, just get through it. Because, you know, if you look back in your life, we've all, it's messy, right? It's messy for everybody, right? You just got to, and you can't wallow in it, right? That's not helpful to anybody, including yourself, but it's easier said than done. But trust your gut that you'll get through it, and that tomorrow or next month or 2 months from now will be better, because it in general always has.
Would you mind sharing a story of some recent sort of resiliency that you have gone through?
So I had my first loss in 2022, and it was because of a practice that I thought our company needed. Oh, by the way, it still exists today, but the team that was responsible for it was not helpful. There were things that happened that it just did not go well. And I felt like the biggest jerk in the universe, because I, for the first time ever, I couldn't pay bonuses and I couldn't pay salary increases. So, and as a leader, you know, your team looks at you and they're going, you know, what the hell? Now they sort of saw what was going on. I'm not hiding anything, right? But I was really worried that I wouldn't be able to dig myself out. Now let's keep in mind, over the years, there's been other things that have happened, and I think the more time you're in business, the more you think, okay, this too shall pass, let's get over it. But while you're in the thick of it, you know, there were a few times I did want to jump off the West End Bridge. So that being said, I took a massive risk. I had a couple people approach me that wanted to buy the company for $2 or so, literally almost. And instead, I hired an EVP of sales and marketing. Now, If you would have looked at that from the outside, you would have said to me, Michelle, you have lost your mind, right? But, you know, knock on wood, it turned out to be the right thing to do. He's been an amazing addition to the team. He's given me my energy back because it was sucked out of me that year. Yeah. You know, no one saw me. Networking, that wasn't even a word in my vocabulary. I was humiliated that I had put myself and my team in that situation. So, again, back to the trust your gut and resilient. You've heard it 100 times. Enjoy the highs because you're going to have lows. And sometimes it's hard to enjoy the highs because you're going, okay, I know there's something coming, right? Yeah. Maybe you're like, let's tiptoe around and like, you know, dance on the West End Bridge for a few minutes here, right? So, yeah.
First of all, I will say, being in 25 years in business and only, you know, just now having your quote unquote first loss, I feel like is an amazing accomplishment, you know, and I understand exactly where you are. I like to take the small bad things and blow them up into big, you know, and then the right. Big wins, you know, I make them smaller.
I think a lot of us do that.
Yeah. But I would say, I want to take a moment and just, you know, in my head, I'm sitting there going, wow, 25 years. And, you know, there's only been 1 year of loss, like congratulations. And I also see that as like, you know, you took a risk, you know, and in technology and in entrepreneur spaces, we have to take risks. And sometimes those risks pay off handsomely and sometimes they don't. But I love the story of resiliency where it was, you know, I made a mistake. I learned some things. You know, it seemed like your team wasn't seeing you as doing this maliciously as well. So that sort of turn into bringing in your SVP and then now growing is, I think, you know, to me, just a huge testament of who you are, right? And the resiliency and trusting some of that gut. So I kind of want to say like, congratulations. I know that it's, you know, it was a tough time for you, but and somewhat constitutes as a failure, but I think you really did pull through for it really, really well.
Right. And look, Misha, as a business owner, we've all had, you know, I could probably give you 5 more sort of not. So it's not like, you know, it's just part of the journey.
Yeah.
Part of the journey.
Agreed. Last question is, what is one actionable item that you would give to another women entrepreneur?
I would say if they're just starting, do a business plan. See, I mean, seriously, do a bit. You can Google it. It's, you know, 5 pages. It's not much, but do a business plan, right? And the other thing is, you know, the people you meet today could be your customers 3 years from now, 5 years from now, or you might be hiring them, right? So you never know. You never know that if the paths that you cross with someone that they you know, will help you as far as your journey. You never know. And, you know, those would be my two, sort of 1.5.
I like your last one. I will say, you know, do it authentically too, right? So as I tell some people, you know, you don't go into spaces, especially inside of Pittsburgh, don't go into spaces, you know, and try to be friends in order to sort of get something in return, especially in Pittsburgh. And I think a lot of places, they're going to smell you out in 2 seconds. So there's a way of doing it authentically for sure.
You can do lots of great things, but nothing spreads like bad news.
That's true. Right? That's very true. I love that. Yeah, I love it. So. Okay. Michelle, where can people find you?
Well, on LinkedIn. You know, just look up my profile, Michelle McGough, or my email, Michelle with 1L at sfornets.com. Those are the two best places. You can text me on LinkedIn or email me. I'm I'm the don't expect me to respond till 8 or 9 in the morning, but 11 or 12 to 1, I'm up. So I have the late shift. My president that I just promoted has the 4 a.m. shift, so it works.
I absolutely love it. Thank you very much, Michelle, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Misha.